Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Warrior Mind Podcast. I'm Greg Swanson, your mental strength coach, guide, and mentor. To find out more about mental strength and warrior mind coaching, you can visit us at www.warriormindcoach.com. And our blog is at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. And again, today I have my good friend and producer, Rishi.
Hello, Greg. Looks like we have a pretty exciting day today of what we're going to be covering.
Yes.
Would you like to go over a little more on what it is we'll be discussing today?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm glad to see that you have a nice haircut.
Oh, thank you.
And that your lung issue is all cleared up.
Yes, literally cleared up.
Had a great time at the Renaissance Fair.
That was fun.
Yes,
that was
especially all
fun.
The maidens walking around.
That was nice too.
Right. So last week we talked about this process of image streaming, and it's just a method of actually tapping into the unconscious, and specifically we can drill it down further into your unconscious as you become more aware of those symbols and dip into that more purposely. But generally, what we're trying to do, the long run, is to have a connection between your conscious and unconscious mind so that you eventually can solve very complex problems, come up with creative solutions, maybe come up with inventions. These processes that we're going to go over for the next couple of weeks are very similar to those that Socrates used, Aristotle, Einstein, a lot of the great what we call geniuses and philosophers used these processes or derivations of these processes to tap into their unconscious with creative solutions, not unlike the shamans. I mean, you go back years and years and years, and shamans have been doing journey work for a very long time for other aspects. They've done it for healing. They have done some divination, but it's still utilizing all of these cultures and individuals knew that what they can't think, basically. So their unconscious is much, much more powerful than their conscious. And so what we did last week, we went over some of that, and we're going to go over some more things today about that.
Oh, cool. Can we just do a brief summary of what image streaming is?
Absolutely. And I'll get into a little bit of some of the reasons why we talk out loud on that too. Basically, image streaming is closing your eyes and describing exactly what you see. We are always receiving images constantly every day. We may not realize it because we're actually driving or doing something, but we shouldn't be paying attention to those images because we have to function in this outer world, if you will. And so part of image streaming is closing your eyes and being aware of what images are coming into your mind in no particular order, in no particular way. And many of us do that. You know, we'll daydream, and sometimes we can do image streaming with our eyes open or our eyes closed. This is a purposeful method where we close your eyes, and it does take practice because you think that you want to see something, you close your eyes, you see nothing. But if I didn't say to close your eyes and describe what you see, you'd close your eyes in about 2 or 3 seconds, an image would come to your head somewhere. You wouldn't know what it was. So the process of image streaming is closing your eyes, having a picture come up, and starting to describe it out loud. Not to yourself, but out loud. And the reason is, this is very similar to mantras and mandalas. When you look at something, it activates your conscious visual part, so your conscious mind is taken care of. And when you do a mantra, your audible is taken care of. So your conscious mind has something to do. And you sit and look at a mandala, repeat a mantra, and you'll then start receiving signals, images, that's part of meditation. And the whole purpose is to keep your conscious mind occupied to let your unconscious mind flow this information. Otherwise, your conscious mind would get involved and mess it all up and say, no, you don't want to think that. How about thinking about this? And what are you going to do tonight when you go grocery shopping? And so the whole process of closing your eyes and describing out loud is very similar to that of using a mandala and mantras, is mm-hmm. keeping your conscious mind occupied while your unconscious mind is basically showing you things. So that's basic, that's the in a real brief nutshell what image streaming is. And these images are part of our unconscious. And as we progress further and drill down and do some more things today, we're eventually going to get to a part where we can purposely tap into our unconscious, receive answers in symbolic form, and know what those symbols mean so we can take action on it. Because it's all fun and games to go see pictures, but how does that help your life?
Correct. And a lot of these pictures we do see, you know, aren't necessarily clear to us, and only we can interpret those pictures our own way and what they mean, you know, symbolically.
Exactly. And in the first process, it's just to start that connection. We have to establish a connection first. It's like you don't start going to the gym and doing Olympic lifts. You go to the gym and just start doing some basic functions. You need to start moving first.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing here. We're just moving, getting that connection. So, you know, that's kind of about what image streaming is. Today we're going to talk about a process that's kind of it's to surprise your unconscious. It could be called over the wall. It could be through the veil. It doesn't matter what we call it. The process is it's very similar to journey work, if anybody's done journey work, but it's going to be an intentional journey where we'll just use a garden, for example. You have a question that you've been trying to resolve an answer to. It could be a question about a job. It could be a question about a relationship. It could even be a question about an invention that you're working on. And you may have no solutions, or you may have multiple solutions. Either case, you kind of stuck and don't know what to do. So you would have a question is, what should I do about my job? Might be the question. And there's specific aspects to ask questions, but this is basically setting your intention for, and I'll use the word journey, setting the intention for this journey. So you ask yourself this question, you have the question in mind, and you really, really have a deep desire to find an answer. If it's like, which movie should I go see? It might not be that strong of a desire.
Well, maybe when you're at Blockbuster and you can't decide which movie to pick. Okay, maybe not.
Right. I don't know if you'd have enough time there. Everybody would get mad at you by standing in line doing some journey work. So the key is The key is to have a deep desire for the answer, to know the question specifically, and I actually would write it down beforehand. And this is, again, where either have a recorder handy or have somebody with you to do this process. So what the process would be is, after you know the question and you wrote it down, you would close your eyes and think of a garden, and whatever you come up with is fine. And that you would then start to describe the garden in detail, in really detail. You'd look up at the sky. You would look around, see who's there, if anybody's there. You'd go into complete description of it, really go into detail. Are there any houses, any trees, any mountains? What are the flowers? Are there any flowers?
Are there spots on the flowers?
Right.
Are some flowers have that, you know, those dying petals while others look lush? That kind of detail.
Exactly. And the purpose of this is to keep your conscious mind occupied while your unconscious mind is coming up with a solution.
That's right, because your conscious mind is pretty judgmental.
Right. And it'll think it knows the answer. Mm-hmm. And it'll give you some answers. So as you're there, as you are in your garden describing it, this can take approximately 5 to 10 minutes, because you really want to get into this aspect, give your unconscious mind a chance to work on the problem. You're then going to come up to a wall, and it could be, you know, I'm not going to say how high the wall is, but it's a wall that you can't see over. And you're going to put your hand on the wall and start to describe the wall. So you've moved from the garden now to this wall, and you can't see what's on the other side. On the other side of the wall, though, is your answer. is the answer to your question, but you can't see it. You don't know what it is. So you've taken care of your conscious mind by describing the garden. You're now describing the wall. So you're putting your hand on the wall. You're walking up and down the wall. You're describing it in really good detail. And then at some point, if you're by yourself, after you described the wall in enough detail, you would then just jump over the wall. And that's what they call over the wall. Or if you're walking, if you choose to, you could be walking through a forest and you see a misty fog, and you would then walk through the veil. And the purpose is that on the other side of the wall or the veil is your answer. And what is, this is where a partner really helps out, because as you're describing the mist or the wall, the partner could then say, jump over the wall. And then immediately when you jump over, you describe in quick detail what's on your feet, what are you wearing, what are you looking at, who's there, what's around. And you just continue describing without pausing. And as you continue to describe, you're going to get more detailed. So this section is your answer area. And this is where your unconscious is giving you symbols to resolve that problem. And so some of the symbols, and this is where you just don't judge it. You just repeat out loud what it is. And this is why either having a person there to write down them or have a recorder to record your answers come in very, very handy. And you start describing it, and again, it goes about for five, six minutes. And then you would pick maybe an object that is kind of unique or maybe doesn't seem like it fits in there. If you're outside in a forest and you saw a red balloon, you would go to the red balloon. Red balloon, what are you here for? How has this helped me with my question? And you would then see how the balloon changes or how your scene changes after asking that. And start to describe that. And you may do that with one or two or three different objects that are unique to that. So again, this process takes, again, 5-10 minutes. So you're already into it about 20 minutes.
Do you choose what obscure object will be? Or does the object just come to you?
You kind of, your unconscious is, a sense, directing you. So you would say, that object looks funny. Let me go. So it's not the same as a power animal where that comes up to you and you see it, but it's, you'll get a sense, you'll get this intuition that I should go talk to that object. Mm-hmm. And so then you ask those objects and see how it changes. Then in the scene, almost assuredly, there's going to be either a hedge, a door, a blind, a window blind, something that you cannot see the other side of. So it's blocking some sort of a vision. You're going to go to that object and ask the same question, your original question. So what should I do about my job? You then go through that process. So if it's a hedge, you jump over the hedge. If it's a window shade, you open the window shade. And what you're doing, what the purpose is you want to get a second opinion, basically. So you're asking your unconscious again to describe in pictures the answer. You will have common objects in both of those pictures. You will have some that are different. And again, you're having this whole thing out loud. So you're recording all of this process out loud about describing what those objects are. And then after about 5-10 minutes of there, you would come back to here and now and open your eyes. And if your partner's been with you, you're journaling it down, you then start to ask a series of questions. What's unique about these? What does this mean to me? And this is where coaching comes in handy. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, if you're with somebody who feels that they want to tell you what those answers are, that might not be the right answers. If you start asking those questions from a conscious perspective, your conscious mind might say, oh, it's full of crap. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the answers, that's one of the questions that you would ask while you're, why, when you come out, is how do I know this is right and true? How do I know this is correct? And you would then, with your eyes open, wait for a flash of a vision, an image. So when you did the over the wall through the veil, you have your eyes closed. When you go through the confirmation questions, you have your eyes open. Mm-hmm. And then you ask questions like, how do I know this is true? And you wait and you see what pictures come and you write down those pictures. And then you go through a series of questions, which I'll put on the website to go through it. I just want to go through a brief encapsulation of what this process is. And then through the help of your partner and through the help of reflecting off of objects, you will then seriously come up with a solution to your issue. Mm-hmm. And the next step is to take action on it. You know, again, it's wonderful to go on these little journeys and adventures into the unconscious, but if you don't take action on it, it's basically a waste of time. You might as well just go take a nap.
Yeah, or watch a movie.
Right. It's the same thing, right? Yeah. You're going to get the same benefit. You're going to get some enjoyment. In a movie, you might be able to eat some popcorn, but then if you don't take any action on what you've tapped into your unconscious, it's no good.
Correct.
So this whole, again, just to reiterate, because it's really, really important that our unconscious is more powerful than we give it credit for. It's not a deep, dark, horrible Pandora's box all the time, as in some mythology.
And what they call the shadow.
Right, the shadow. And that's very interesting because Carl Jung talked about that, but the shadow is also... The shadow is those aspects of ourselves that we try to hide, and it's also those aspects of ourselves that are powerful that we're not living up to. So it's those untapped resources. So the unconscious is not always that. It can be full of inspiration. When you listen to artists and musicians and inventors, they talk about their muse.
And you wonder, like, where they come up with this stuff.
Right. And there's these muses, right? These daughters of Odin. So these muses is the inspiration, but all this is symbolic of their unconscious or our unconscious mind. And when we're able to have communication with our unconscious mind, our life becomes easier. The big thing is to trust it. And that's why we do these little steps first. To do the image streaming, to do journey work, to ask maybe smaller questions to gain trust, although we shouldn't have to because our unconscious is part of us. And if we don't trust us, who are we going to trust?
Definitely not the conscious.
Right. I mean, even though that is part of us too, you know, but so there's a trust in all of that. But so the unconscious really knows what's best for us. Its job is to maintain and preserve the body. And the body is part of all of us. I mean, part of yourself, and your body is part of your work and your job. And so it knows the best things to do. And these processes assist a person into connecting and communicating with their unconscious. Mm-hmm. And when an individual can do that, then their life changes if they take action on it. And that's kind of like the... Like I'm putting together some workshops of basically the shaman warrior, right? The shaman will go into the unconscious and get the information and get the etheric part. Then the warrior takes the action with it. Mm. And you know, without the action part, all this is done. But if you take action without inspiration, you're just running around like a wild man. So there's no good. If we know the warrior out there doing nothing is no good at all.
You're like a chicken running around with its head cut off.
Exactly. And it just is not doing any good at all. So without both, without the conscious and the unconscious. So the conscious is that warrior part, which actually goes and takes action on the information that the unconscious gives it. There's a book out called Switch, which talks about the unconscious and the conscious, as the unconscious is the elephant and the conscious is the rider. And the elephant will work on emotions and the rider works on logic. And if one of them, if the rider doesn't know how to control the elephant, it's going to be thrown off and moved in all sorts of directions. And if the elephant tries to control, if the rider tries to control the elephant, it's not going to work either. So you need that happy medium. And I look at it as more of a, you know, the shaman and the warrior, the aspect.
That's a pretty interesting analogy. That's something I got to remember with whatever I do.
Yeah.
And whatever action I take, it's always important to include the unconscious with the conscious, because they just work in harmony together and work together to provide the best result. It's like a synergistic marriage between the two. You know, when you have one and one, it doesn't necessarily add to two, but rather, you know, one and one make three.
Exactly. And the key is to work together, because you can have a rider on an elephant, and if the elephant doesn't listen and goes its own way, the rider is just long for the ride, but the rider wants to go his career in this other direction. The elephant's going, no, we're going to go this way. Mm-hmm. And your career goes down the can, and you don't know why. Well, because your elephant is taking you for a ride. Mm-hmm. And then if the rider starts to take control, there's going to be frustration because the elephant doesn't have its chance to exercise and move around. And mm-hmm. So there's this communication that has to take place. And it's a really good example of the elephant and the rider, because they're almost two separateness, but when they're together, a rider and the horse, any type of where there's a human mm-hmm. on an animal, when that connection is made and they both work together, amazing mm-hmm. things can happen. And that's, you know, with the shaman and the warrior. The shaman gets the unconscious, the warrior takes action, and they both work together.
Amazing.
So how did that sound?
Sounded really good. Sounded really, really nice. Very, very useful information. And, you know, when you go back to our other podcasts, we've covered a lot. We've covered our whole range of ideas and topics. But at the same time, you know, a lot of our podcasts have a certain goal in mind, and is using the power of our unconscious to direct us in it's to use the power of our unconscious to direct us in our best interests. Our technique of going, the technique we've mentioned today over the wall is one of them, which leads me to a question I want to ask you. Of all the techniques we've covered, whether it's over the wall, if it's image streaming, if it's the hypnosis podcast we mm-hmm. use about the visualization part, which one's your favorite?
Well, I kind of started my unconscious journey work with shamanic practices. Mm-hmm. And with that, there's amazing things that can happen too. Because with journey work, it's not just close your eyes and go to the underworld and see what happens. You do also direct your unconscious mind in that aspect. And I think journey work is really powerful, because when I do workshops for it, one of the amazing things is I'll team up people who have never met, and I'll have them journey for each other. So one person A will journey for person B. We go on a journey for about 20 minutes, and when person A comes back, they write down some notes. They don't tell person B anything yet, so they just write down some notes. When that's over, person B journeys for person A. Come back, write down some notes. Then they share what they've journeyed on. And the question is, Do you unconscious have a message for person B when person A journeys, and the vice versa? Every single workshop I've held, every pair has a message that the other one understands completely and 100% understands what that message is. It's not like, I don't get it. Like one person would come back with a dolphin and go, yep, you know what? I really understand. I need to be more playful. I understand that completely. One person came back with, you know, something else, a different message. Every single one. And so for journey work and getting in touch with the unconscious, that's my favorite, because when you can do it for somebody else and you understand, that's proof. That's proof that we're tapping into something that's bigger than us, that has a message for us, and if we just learn to listen to it, it's great.
That's really amazing. When we talk about journey work, a lot of people, you know, who hear this for the first time may have some type of misconceptions of what journey work is. Could you explain what some of those could be?
Yeah, journey work, you know, a lot of times with shamanism and journey work, there's a lot of psychotropic aspects that are tied into it. And when teaching plants are used correctly, in accordance with rituals and shamans that know how to utilize them correctly, they do have some help. There's been studies, there's been documentaries on the History Channel about LSD and some other things being invented that help expand the consciousness and mm-hmm. other stuff. But so there's a lot of negativeness about journey work, thinking that you're going to have to take some mushrooms or drop some acid or whatever. And that's not the case. It helped those individuals to get to a more profound state of awareness, if you will. But because we're always bathed in our unconsciousness, it's just a matter of tapping into it. Mm-hmm. And that's where the drum comes in very handy. The drum is very critical, at least for what I feel is important with journey work, because the drum simulates the heartbeat of the earth. And you drum at a specific beat, and it may sound very monotonous, but after a while you feel the rhythm of the drum. And the drum waves take you on this journey. And there's more to it than what I'm saying here, and I go over it more specifically in the workshops. But then the perception of utilizing teaching plants is not true, that you don't have to. Part of it also is that you're falling asleep and it's a dream, that it's not real, you're making it up. That is the purpose of journeying for somebody else in the beginning, to prove that it's not made up. That when you come back with a message for your partner and your message understands it completely, and your partner understands the message completely, and you don't even know this person, you've never met them before in your entire life, and you come back with a message that they understand, that's proof. So there's that conception that it's not real, I'm making it up. Mm-hmm. So the first one is that there's no teaching plants required. The second is that it's made up. It's just my imagination.
Mm-hmm. Well, then again, there's symbols and meaning in dreams, as Carl Jung has written in numerous publications as well. But I'm not saying that journey work is dreaming or sleeping and dreaming. That's completely different. But going back to the teaching plants, yeah, I could see that just being optional, because the purpose is to tap into your subconscious mind.
Right. But those are some of the perceptions that individuals have about journey work. They feel that they may get stuck into a coma somehow and not be able to come out, and there are these different aspects. And they will not be stuck. They may not want to come back out of the journey if it's so powerful. They may be getting a lot of information. The difference between traditional journey work and things that we've talked about here is you don't talk. You just lay down and observe. And the importance in that is as soon as you come back out of the journey, you start to journal. Mm-hmm. And that when you start to journal, that should fire off the memories of the journey. Obviously, back when journey work was done through all the shamanic practices, it was felt more important to stay in the journey than vocalize it. And that's where the newer versions, if you will, the journey 2.0 that we've gone over, I think has some validity to it because of the record keeping aspect of it. I've done many journeys and come back with only two or three symbols that I can remember, where I wish I would have recorded it, because there's a lot more powerful things into it. But then I go, well, if I was meant to remember it, I would have. Mm-hmm. But I think this way it allows you to tap into more of your genius essence.
So there's another misconception that we just cleared away. As you mentioned, you don't talk. So in other words, you're not speaking in tongue. And then also, because you have to journal what you've seen or what you've visualized, it is a conscious, you are putting in a conscious effort to journey work.
Exactly. Yes, it is. And you also set an intention before you journey. You want to find out how to heal an ailment, and you maybe want to find out a decision on a job, or what should I do about this? And you journey, and there are symbols there too. It's all symbolic. Our unconscious speaks in symbols, and the more we work with those symbols, the more we understand what they mean, the more we're able to take action and have a life filled with pleasure and success, abundance, and happiness.
Yes. Sounds good.
Very good. So then next week we'll pick up on some other aspects and fine-tune a little bit more. And as we leave, remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And if you don't take your rightful responsibility and begin to program your own mind, the world will program it.